Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Glenn Hazel went into a lockdown, and no, it was not because of a shortage of kosher milk, but in fact, two suspicious devices were found near Kosher World. Bomb technicians made the scene safe. Area was reopened. After that, CAP, the community security, as well as CSO, working with SAPS, later located a waste recycler, and he was believed to have placed the item. So let's talk about this. What is the latest? Mark van Jaarsveld, CEO of CAP, joining us in studio. Mark, welcome.
Thanks for being here. Good morning, Howard, and good morning to the team and all your listeners. Awesome to be here.
It is great to have you, and it's always better in studio. So let's just talk about what happened, because what was amazing to me was to see our different organizations working together, but within the areas of expertise, like one step out of it, which is where I am. It actually makes me feel tremendously proud, because this to me was an example of the magnificence of what's been built in this community. I have totally led the witness here, but really what I want to know is where does CAP fit in? Where did CAP fit into the whole story?
Yes, I mean, I think, obviously, from a security perspective, we're always quite critical of ourselves. So every event that happens, we're always reviewing and trying to learn from it. And, not very often do we sit back and actually say, it worked. So I think having been on the scene on Friday, the 24th of October, and having seen, all of the different operational coordination and the different teams working, it was something really to be impressed by. Obviously, I'm not a lay individual, so there is a lot of experience that I have, and I can't critique much about what happened on Friday from both our point of view as well as from the CSO's perspective. It was really impressive. I think the community, as we said in one of our statements, is really really very lucky to have both organizations own different sets of experience and strengths. And, from a CAP point of view, we've been in this now for next year 20 years. And we always speak about our strategy in from three points of view. One is this defensive strategy, which is, the cars and the people on the streets and the cameras and all the things that everyone actually knows us to be. The second part is this offensive strategy, which is going into intelligence and working very closely in a deep level partnerships with the police in order to identify criminal elements and bring them to book. And then the third, which is our most recent evolution of CAP, is crime prevention through environmental design. So I think, that is the green team as everyone knows them, and how we're trying to fulfill the void left in city services to some extent. But coming back to the specifics of this case, I think the coordination was incredible. I think that there are some lessons to learn that obviously we'll go through both from a CAP point of view and together with the CSO to strengthen on that response. But when confronted with what we were confronted with, it either was something that we needed to really worry about, or it was something that we didn't need to worry about. And it was incumbent on us then to deal with it as the most serious possible scenario. And the teams did well. Every single person, from the professional staff to the volunteers to our teams, everyone did really well and should be very proud of.
Right. So the immediate threat was neutralized in terms of what it was or what it could have been, and then what follows is a shift more towards the investigation part of how did this happen, what happened, what was it, was there real danger, etc. That's, I imagine, where your team became much more active.
Yeah, so, I received a lot of phone calls on Friday afternoon asking if we had launched a specialized task team and, all of these types of things. And looking back at it, my answer then, which is the same now, is this is what we do every day,
Right.
So we don't investigate suspicious objects every day, but we're involved in investigations, some that are minor, others that are very serious. And we understand, how to build the chain of evidence and the custody of evidence and all of those types of things. So I think, on the afternoon of the 24th, we treated it as a very suspicious object. And it became quite clear soon after that it wasn't an explosive device, an improvised explosive device, and that therefore it brought into question, well, what was the intention behind why this was there, you know? And the actual components and the makeup of the device obviously seized for testing, and we'll have the results on that, which will be definitive, I guess, in the next few days, hopefully not too many weeks. And, you know, I think as the investigation progressed, we became aware quite soon after that there was this recycler that we had identified who had placed the objects at the tree, which was on the sidewalk of Summerway, quite about 100 or so meters away from the corners of Kosher World. And when we started to track that individual's movements through the suburb, we were able to ascertain that he entered the area roughly at around about 5 o'clock in the morning, and he left there at around about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Most of his routes were along the normal recycling routes that one would expect, and his trolley got bigger and bigger and bigger as the day progressed and as he sorted through things. So that's what we understood. We were able to enhance his face using very sophisticated technology, and then we distributed that to our teams. And within a couple of minutes on Saturday evening, in fact, we got responses from some of our teams, as well as one or two people that we have local informers in the suburb who corroborated each other's information that this was an individual known to them and to our teams in particular. They'd known him as a routine recycler who's been in the area for, you know, 4 to 5 years. And so we began to try and find him, because I think when one understands, you know, if we're waiting for forensic results, which will give us an idea of what this material was and, you know, what definitively what the object was, on the other side, you can find the individual and get to the intention. And I think that was our objective here. We wanted to find him. We wanted to understand the intention. And then from there, obviously, that would guide the investigation moving forward. And so we started to visit the places that he was known to commonly visit and where he is known to sleep. And he was not there. In fact, we were told that he had left Joburg on Friday afternoon and had gone to his home in Hammanskraal. And fast forward a few days later, he returned. Our team found him. And we started to question him with the police. And he volunteered all of the information. There was no leading questions. He literally said he knew we were looking for him. He wasn't sure why. And he started to then tell us what had happened when we obviously said to him, you know, this is why we were looking for you and we'd like you to tell us what your story is. So that's the high level. It was quite a quick investigation on our front. It involved no less than about 15 people from our office, from people collecting footage from homes to, you know, people debriefing various people in the suburbs who knew him, et cetera, to try and verify and validate the info that we had, to analysts, to people, forensic device experts who could enhance the facial imagery, et cetera. And then we got him on Wednesday, the 29th, I think it was, so 5 days later.
Right. Incredible. So, and the story or the events that he recounted, how do you decide in a situation like this whether it's plausible or not?
So it's a great question. I think I'm going to give a bit of an example first, right? Because I think obviously, again, everything, the finality of this matter will be determined by the police investigation and ultimately whatever the outcome is of that and the forensic testing will know in due course. But, you know, if you go to a doctor, Howard, and you're not feeling so well and you think maybe you've got a lump or whatever the case might be, originally you get a diagnosis and then you get subjected to a series of testing. And as those testing or as those various markers, you go through it, you know, most of them come back clear, but you're still left with that one little test that's telling you like, you know, will I be okay or not? So perhaps that may help listeners understand it from a security point of view. You know, when you look at this incident, as of today, you know, the 3rd of November at 8:23, what I'm telling you we believe to be true, having verified and validated. Enough. Well, in the future, if something happens, it might change. But as of today, you know, what do we understand? So there are several markers, just how you would look at these things from a health perspective, the security points of view, various markers. So I think the first and foremost thing is that this individual is known. He's known to us. He's been in the suburb for 3 to 4 years. You know, he has never had any issues or troubles with our team. You know, the second part was that when he was aware that the police and ourselves were looking for him, you know, someone who normally would have done something they shouldn't have done from a, you know, a ill intent perspective,
would not stay away.
And yet he came back on Tuesday afternoon from Hammanskraal, and Wednesday morning he was picking up his recyclable material in Highlands North.
Right.
You know, nearest corner would have been, it was on 6th Avenue, in fact, on corner Joseph. So, and then he volunteered all this information. So what did he tell us? He said, in essence, on Thursday afternoon, he was selling his scrap from the day that he had collected, and he found discarded, what he described as discarded battery cases, but not the normal type of battery, like a car battery or a computer battery, or, you know, batteries that you would find typically in a normal household. He described them as, you know, almost like very large battery banks, okay? Mm-hmm. And he took it, and he went into the one scrapyard in Weinberg, which he actually then later pointed out to the police and ourselves, and he tried to sell it. They told him they only buy, you know, a handful of types of batteries. In this instance, that wouldn't be one that they would procure. And so he then took it outside, and he actually went to a neighboring scrapyard around the corner. He broke it on the floor. It was in these black casings. He broke it on the floor, and he took out the components, the internal components of this battery bank, you know, which had an LCD screen. It had some computer, you know, capabilities, or whatever you want. One, not computer capabilities, but it had a board and LCDs and obviously batteries. And he then took it to the secondary scrapyard, having broken the case open outside, and he tried to sell it again, and unfortunately was told the same thing, that particular scrapyard didn't want to buy those items. And so he decided to keep them on his trolley, although everything had been sold for the day, and he went home. He woke up on Friday morning, and I think his intention was that he wanted to try and sell it at other places. And on Friday morning, he woke up and he started his routine like we saw on the CCTV footage. And he went through suburb, you know, of Glenhazel, and he made his way to Sandringham Spa, where he collected the bulk of the material that he then had collected for the day. And he came up Long and turned left into Summerway, and his trolley started to wobble. You know, it was unbalanced, and things were starting to fall off. And so he decided to stop on the side of the road where this tree was located in the shade, and he took off all of his items, and he started to resort his trolley and to repack things. And in that process, he found these two objects again, and he was like, you know, I've been schlepping these things around the whole morning. They're actually quite heavy. I'm not going to get any value out of them, and he discarded them on the side of the road. And off he went. So that was his version. What did we do to understand it? We, as I said, asked him to point out these various scrapyards and the various places where he broke it, etc. And he took us to the two scrapyards, and he provided, you know, pointed those out. The police spoke to people at both of those. We also obtained statements from people who then could corroborate his version independently. One of those provided a statement that said, for example, that they'd seen him outside breaking this black box, and then he came in to try and sell these objects, which in their minds looked like batteries, but they only again bought particular type of batteries. We then went to the place where he broke the objects, and we found a black box
with
a serial number, with a manufacturing detail, you know, and so we could understand the product and all of those types of stuff. And we reached out independently again to the actual reseller that we had found online, and we sent them a picture of the suspicious object that we had found on the Friday, and they came back and confirmed that this is a very old, specialized battery that they would have used in television and cinematic productions, almost like teleprompters very sophisticated production equipment. And so it was a battery for an old battery model for one of those products. And they gave us that in writing. We obviously handed all of that information over to the police and provided statements to the extent that our team was involved and what information we had been provided. And so that was in essence the story.
What about the fact that, and I'm very wary of time, but what about the fact that it almost looked quite deliberately like, you know, with those tubes, looked like, it looked like either an arts and crafts project of a bomb, a caricature of a bomb. And as I said when I was interviewing, it's almost like it could have said boom on it just because it was that.
Yeah.
Is that just coincidence?
Look, I think again, when we saw what we saw on Friday the 24th, it was highly suspicious. It looked like an improvised explosive device.
Right.
You know, and therefore that's the response and all that was
appropriate. I'm not even talking about the response. Coming to the
placement, you know, what we know is that it was placed at the base of the tree, and throughout the morning after it had been discarded, there had been a multitude of people that had actually come past. One guy kicked it, another guy picked it up. So the original state in which they were placed was not the original. Not the state in which they were then subsequently found. But again, the final result from the police, may very well indicate something different. Our belief at this stage, with the information that we have available, is that it's most likely going to tell us it is a lithium battery that is, part of a specialized product.
Yeah.
And again, we've had a lot of calls from a variety of different sects and lots of conspiracy theories and people who have got all of these ideas. And I think, you know, CAP has always been around, one of our main philosophies is that we deal with facts, and it's important for the community to know where we're holding today. You know, again, if something comes tomorrow,
you know, that's different. It reminds me actually of COVID, because as we were going through this pandemic, we had a certain amount of information that was available
exactly.
at that time.
Exactly.
And you make the best decision, and you provide the best expertise with that which you know.
Exactly.
And in a way, that's what this is Friday to the Saturday night, so this process goes on. And maybe what I need to say to listeners is just hold your, just suspend the theories in a way, because there's no doubt you'll get to the bottom of it. It's just not everything is available when you want it to be available.
Correct. And I think, again, from our point of view, the investigation today indicates X, and that's what we are holding bar for today. And if it changes, then we'll reassess and we'll 100%. Allocate and follow up and do whatever we need to do. But I think most importantly, we should be proud. We should be talking about
100%,
the positives here. And like you earlier indicated,
to me, that just sitting almost as commentary, which is a very unique position to be in, but looking in at this and looking at the community organizations and the way everything just went into action, everybody bringing their expertise, their training, their, as you've said, years and years of developing systems, bringing it to this is just something that, to me, that's actually the story, which is incredible. We do need to end it there, unfortunately. Very, very interesting conversation. But again, thank you, Mark van Jaarsveld, Chief Executive Officer at Community Active Protection at CAP. Thanks to your teams who are relentless in their fight to make our world a better and safer place. So thank you. And just keep doing the magic work that you are doing.